All right, I'd like to welcome everybody to the fourth shiur in Sefer HaChinuch. We're beginning now mitzvah 551, Shlo Libosh Shatnez, not to wear a mixture of wool and linen together. Shlo Libosh Beged HaMechubar Mitzemer Ufishtim, Vezeo Nikra Shatnez. So this specific mitzvah, this negative commandment, Lo Taaseh, is that one should not wear a garment that has a combination of wool meaning the wool of sheep, and pishtan, and the flax coming from the flax plant, also known as linen. The combination of the two together is called shatnez. On this it says in the Torah, lo tilbash shatnez, Semer ufishtim yahdav, that a person shall not wear together shatnez, which is the combination of wool and linen at the same time. One of the first things that people ask, myself being a shatnez tester, is why would anyone be putting linen into a woolen garment? So I'd like to just tell you that wool, of course, everybody knows, has this nice, fluffy, wonderful texture to it, keeps you warm, but it's not particularly stiff, meaning it doesn't really hold its form on its own. However, linen has a very specific property to it, in it that it has a bit of a sort of gummy stickiness, hardness to it, especially when pressed with a iron, that it gives it kind of almost like a hard sort of, you know, keep everything together sort of a situation. So what happens is linen becomes an ideal material to be used along with a woolen garment in order to give it some form, in order to give it some body, in order to give it sometimes also a little bit of a luster, give it some nice shine to it, as also linen has that particular property to it. Now, generally speaking, when we're learning through the Sefer HaChinuch, we go into some detail on the specific reasonings behind the mitzvah, in other words, the connection to our everyday life. In this particular class, we're going to veer off from that a bit, although we are going to mention the Rambam and his particular reasoning. We're not going to get too deep into the philosophy in terms of its bearing upon us on a personal growth level. One of the reasons for that is because earlier on in the 62nd mitzvah, it is spoken about, and God willing, when we get up to that particular shiur, we'll discuss at length all the various ideas that lead up to the concept of shatnez. Now, Remez Mesharshei HaMitzvah Katavti B'Seder Mishpatim Be'inya Mechshefa Lo Tehayeh. So there, in other words, this is the understandings of this specific mitzvah, meaning of shatnez, thereby the mitzvah, which is number 62, regarding that a witch shall not live, a sorcerer shall not live, that there specifically he discusses certain ideas about the various mixing of forces and so forth. And like I said, so discussing on that level we'll have to take up when we do this specific mitzvah. Vaharambam zichron rechan, the Rambam of blessed memory, he writes like this. He says, "B'tam ha'isur lefisha yokomrei avodah zarah lovshin bezmanahu." So he writes that in those times, meaning in the times of the Torah, he says it was commonplace that those people who were ovdei avodah zarah, who were worshippers of foreign worship, that means to say idols, that means to say those that place some sort of intermediary between man and God, it means to be anybody who is following a service which is foreign to the service which God commanded, which is Torah true Judaism. So this group, would wear clothing that would be made out of this material, meaning being made out of wool with a mixture of linen in it. It's also known, I mean, even in modern day times, that these materials have certain properties from a electrical perspective, and maybe perhaps having some sort of effect from a meditative perspective, perhaps maybe one of the reasons why they were using these materials. Whatever the case may be, certainly this is not the sort of material, it's not the sort of thing that we want associated with a Jew in his life. Again, we're not getting too deep into those reasons. V'ktav od ki hayom hum for some of the war etzel komarim sheyesh mitzrayim. And in fact, the Rambam specifically brings up that sorcerers in Egypt in his time, excuse me, the priests, in his time in Egypt, that they would be making use of these type of garments. So now we'll get into the actual meat of the mitzvah itself, the various laws that are connected with shatnez, and shatnez itself, all the various laws connected with it, and so forth. Medinei ha-mitzvah, so from the laws regarding this mitzvah, ma sha'amru zichron l'vracha, what the rabbis of blessed memory have written, she'en isur min ha-torah, machberet tzemer v'pishtim, ela b'shua tavoy v'nuz. Now, in order to have a situation where you have a garment that is asur, that is not permitted from the Torah, it needs to be that there is a combination, as we said before, of wool and linen, but this combination has gone through three different processes, the first being carding. So shua, what they would do is, in the case of wool, they would take the wool after it's been sheared off the sheep, and they would go ahead and they would have these very big steel combs. And these steel combs would then be inserted into the wool and they would pull along the wool. And this is called carding. And what this does is it removes from inside the wool pieces of materials that were collected on the animal from wherever he happened to have been going. It removes from the wool any sort of tangling and knotting and so forth, leaving the wool in a state that it can go into this second part of the process, which is tavoy, which is spinning. In other words, they would then take these various fibers now that have been carded, meaning that have been pulled and have been combed on the wool itself, from that wool material, and then they would begin to spin it. Now, spinning it together would make a single, long, fibrous piece of, the beginnings of what will eventually become a thread. So this spun fiber together then goes into the next processes, which is called nuz, which is twining. When this particular situation is they would take these threads, as they are technically called, and they would go ahead and they would twist the threads, and they would bring these twisted threads next to each other, and they would actually twine, they would actually spin around each other, and they would form a tight cord, which is the technical term. So technically the thread that you have, or the yarn that you have, is actually sort of more of a cord. It is a mixture, meaning it's bought together of these various pieces. So now, you need to have all three together in order to have a situation where the materials produced from that, combined together, are going to be shatnez. So klomar shatzemer shua b'fnei atzmo. That means to say that the actual wool itself is carded separately. Klomar taruf atavoy b'fnei atzmo. It's spun on its own. V'nuz b'fnei atzmo, and it's twined on its own. Perish nuz shazor. When we're talking about nuz, it means to say it's been twisted together. Now pishtan. Now when it comes to the case of flax, the linen plants grow sort of like as a very tall grass with sort of a hard coating on the outside. And this tall grass, when split open, sort of, it's kind of like milkweed in a sense. It kind of has these running fibers that go through the middle of it. Now, these fibers, they are taken out, and they are in a very similar type of situation. They are hackled or carded. I mean, they go ahead and they comb them and so forth, which begins to give them sort of a fluffiness to it. And in fact, even if you take if you undid a thread of linen and you began to dissect it, and you were left then with fibers, you're going to see some thick bundles within the actual material itself of the linen, that was the linen thread, and those thin thick bundles are actually what this entire plant was made of. So there we go. You could go ahead and take this thick bundle, and you could then card it, or even use your thumbnail and just sort of strike your fingernail against it, and it'll actually puff and poof. And what you'll actually get is sort of, again, kind of a cottony kind of puff, or this sort of milkweedish type of thing, which is sort of the way I see it. So now, after they would go ahead and they would, you know, again, poof this material out, making it usable, and of course also by carding it, they would help to again, eliminate some of the clinginess of the material, because the material itself actually kind of is gummy. Again, the outside pectin on the cells of the plant matter may give it a sort of, like I said, this sticky kind of feel to it, which of course is part of the actual nature of linen that we really want. We want that material that's going to be nice and firm and it's going to look real good. So now, this material then is on its own. The same process goes where it's parted. On its own. So we're talking about wool on its own, and then we're talking about linen on its own. So the two of them were made into threads. Now, you then take these individual threads that you've created, and they're combined. Now, they're either woven together, or they're even knotted together. Once a double knot is made in these two threads, meaning they've been put together in a permanent fashion, that material, the resulting, you know, new material of the combination of the two, is called shatnez and is asur. It is not allowed to be worn. Now, until you've actually done the all three processes that we're talking about, meaning carding, spinning, and twining, that all three of them have been done on the actual materials, ain't the shatnez deraita. So there are those that hold that this is not the shatnez from the Torah, meaning if not all three parts were done. Elamin derabanan, it's only a derabanan, kedat ktat meforshim ve'en lokin alav. And according to these specific Meforshim, these commentators, these rabbis that are holding of this particular mindset, that unless all three parts were done, then the situation is that you don't have a Torah violation if you were to wear a garment made of such materials. Now, that doesn't mean it's permissible. It means that, in fact, you cannot do so. It means it's a rabbinical prohibition. There's an expression that says in the Gemara Brachot, Kol ha'overal divrei chachamim chayav mita. Anybody who violates the words of the chachamim is warranting upon himself the death penalty. In many ways, from a spiritual perspective, violating the chachamim, violating the words of the chachamim, who are an embodiment of the living Torah, meaning the living expression of God's will in this world, is considered to be, in many ways, a far worse thing than actually violating a aspect of the Torah, which is of the written Torah. Avam midrabanan. Now, we're talking about a derabanan. Asur kol shenasa b'hem echad b'hem lachot. Therefore, it's a derabanan. Now, anytime you only have one of these processes, you've done it. For example, or it was carded, or it was spun, or it was twined. So if you took raw wool and you went ahead and you spun that together without actually carding first, or if you went ahead and you just created some sort of twine out of the material itself, in all those cases you would create a material that would only be a derabanan. A more practical, or a very practical example, is Zamru Zichron Mircha, that which the rabbi said, Halevadin Asurin, Klomar Midrabanan, meaning that felt is asur, that a person felt materials are asur, they're not allowed as a result of rabbinical rule. Now, Mibnei Shua, now what happens is felt is carded, they take the material itself, the wool, and they go ahead and they brush it out to creating separate fibers. Once they have all the separate fibers, the fibers are then put together and then they're pressed. And the actual making of a material comes from the pressing together of the fibers, as opposed to any sort of combination of the fibers together through a tying or a weaving process. Now, from those chachamim, from those rabbis with the mindset that even one of these processes that have been affected upon the materials, that renders this material, meaning a prepared material, for being over on a deraita, meaning for violating on a Torah law. Shamru b'kana surin kolom deraita. So anytime, as we said before, that something is a sur, for example, here when we talk about the felt, the isur here is actually an isur deraita and not a derabanan, meaning not a rabbinical law. Va'amru zichron l'cha. The rabbis have stated of Blessed Mary, be'inyan ze afilu asara matzot ze agav ze. Now, one of the things that many people don't realize is that clothing is not the only form of material that may contain shatnez, that is asur, that is not allowed for a person to have or to make use of, more specifically. So, for example, the Chachamim, in this particular, they mention that even if a person has 10 mattresses, one on top of the other, and underneath all of them, there is kelaim, there is, which is another meaning, which means a forbidden mixture, another word that's frequently used in place of shatnez in Hebrew. And underneath them you have this material. You're not allowed to sit on top of these mattresses. The chayshinan shema tikarech nima al besaro, that what may happen is that a fringe of this material may end up wrapping upon the person. Meaning as a result of him sitting down, it will cause the material to come up. And that material then will then warm the person's body. In other words, it will be something which he's wearing now and not just sitting upon. So therefore, that's his consideration. That's something which is asur. Before going on, I'll even mention certain other things that people may not think about. One of those being curtains. In other words, curtains in a person's house need to be shatnez-free. If a person has wool curtains, or curtains that seem to have a linen-like look to them. Now, when we say linen-like, again, it's got this nice sort of luster to it. Not an outright, mirror. It's got a nice little shine luster to it. And it's kind of a thickish type of material, often sometimes it's even light, but it has, or it has these slubs running through it, meaning you see a nice clean material, and then randomly throughout you see sort of bunches of material, I mean bunches of thread that seem to kind of glob up throughout the material. It looks very similar, a person may be familiar then with the look of raw silk. It's the same kind of look. In fact, if you have a situation where you think something looks like raw silk, it should also be checked. Meaning either one. Meaning if it looks, has that look to it, it's time to give it a good check. So for example, we're talking about curtains. But there are other materials. If your person has carpets that are made from wool, it's a concern. You have to go ahead and check and make sure that the backing underneath the carpet, where the carpet is actually has been poked through and is attached, that material there is a material which is not linen. Linen, again, having this fantastic structure to it, would make a perfect backing. There's a cousin of linen called jute, which is frequently used for this purpose, and it would not be asur. It would not actually be forbidden to have a mixture of jute and wool. So either way, though, it needs to be checked out. Other concerns are, for example, as we saw here already, this idea of some sort of cushions or mattresses or something along those lines. A person needs to take a look. Recently, there are very inexpensive baby mattresses that go in cribs that I saw in Kmart. And being that for me it's a sort of simple thing, because I'm frequently checking shots, I always keep a little pocket knife on me. I take a little quick little look, and I will tell you that I actually saw that there was shatnez in this mattress that was used for babies. And so it's really something to be concerned about. A good way to tell is if you can take a peek into a mattress and see whether or not the materials look like they're made of recycled materials and things along those lines, meaning they've got a whole bunch of different colored materials that all look all shredded and mixed together. It's very possible that in that mixture is actually linen. So something to really be concerned about. The same goes for sofas. Inexpensive sofas often, again, reuse materials and things like that. All these things are things that you need to be concerned about. If you take a look inside, if you see it's a sponge foam material, is not nothing to worry about in these cases, but it's something to be concerned about. Now, in America, this is much less found, at least modern day, and again, with purchasing furniture and so forth from department stores. But in other countries, in fact, in Israel, it's not uncommon at all that wool will be used as the stuffing material in furniture. And again, the same thing. You have to then watch out and make sure that the stitching that's used throughout this, throughout the sofas and various other materials and that were put together, that are put together, that these stitches are not made from linen. Linen, being a nice strong material, is ideal for going ahead and sewing together pillowcases or cases for these type of cushions and so forth. So there is what to be concerned about there also. Even boots, if a person, again, is concerned about, you should take a look and see that in boots and so forth, that again, if there's a cushiony material, this could be concerned. So anything that basically is going to, can come upon a person or may potentially be used as a person to gain some sort of warmth, is something that could open up to be a question of shadness, to be a question of wearing a material that is a mixture of wool and linen. So now, v'dvar ze amru zechon v'lecha, kishot an aklai, mashem etachat hen rakin. Now, regarding this idea of the, regarding the issue there of the, of these, as we talk about these mattresses or these cushions. Now, when the Chachamim were telling you that it was a sore, that a person wouldn't be allowed to sit on them, this was in a situation where these particular mattresses or these particular cushions were hard, were very soft. Now, the fear is, of course, that by sitting on them, then what will happen is that again they could wrap around a person or something else along those lines, and that in fact can again will create this situation where it's going to give him some sort of warmth and therefore be some sort of wearing. Now this is an issur derabanan. The interesting thing about this is that if this was an issur deraita, this would actually all be permissible. Even when these mattresses were soft, now they're hard and they have no form of going over you, even derabanan, even according to the rabbis, a person is allowed to sit on such, so some sort of a hard type of material that won't bunch up over you, won't wrap around you when you're sitting on it, is not a concern whatsoever. So in a situation that even if it's soft, that if this was a Torah law, it would be completely permissible. Why is that? You shall not place upon yourself, meaning that from the Torah it's all about wearing, in other words actually placing upon yourself the garment. But here we're talking about placing it underneath the person, and therefore if it was a deraita it would be permissible, but here it's a derabanan and the rabbis have been strict regarding this matter, and a person should be careful about again his furnishings and various other things which are not clothing that can come potentially to wrap around him and cause him to be warmed and so forth, and therefore be a form of clothing to some degree. The Gemara that we are commonly talk about is the Bavli. The Yerushalmi, which is sometimes called in English the Palestinian Talmud, is an older text, and it's another Talmud that was put together in Eretz Yisrael. There it writes, Amu deharim dechasatot afal pi shehen kashim bimleim. So now you have these type of they're these type of chairs kind of that sort of wrap around you. In other words, the way that they're designed when you sit in them, and or they're sort of a pillow bolster. A person would go ahead and he would sit on or bolster himself up using these different types of cushions and so forth. So now, even if they are hard, but their filling is hard inside of them, asula shevelei midrabanan. Now, as a rabbinical issur, you're not allowed to sit in them. Lefishehen nichpalim al yoshebehem. Now, the thing is that these particular types of mats and so forth would specifically, when a person would sit, they would kind of sit into them, and they would sort of wrap over the person a little bit on the sides. Now, if being that that's the case, therefore, even though they're filled with something hard, therefore, even if they're hard, a person wouldn't be allowed. Of albereki, now, if they're empty, though, meaning again, it's just sort of a material lining around something, the leka chashash ha'alam mutar l'shev mehem, because there's no fear that they're going to come upon the person, so therefore, because of the fact that they're hard and they're just sort of stiffened against the sides. So again, if a person is sitting on some sort of hard materials and things like that, there's nothing to worry about. Now, the reason for this matter, now, the reason is because if you recall the Pasuk, let's go back for a moment, the actual verse where we find the Isur, we find the impermissibility in the Torah itself, it says, Lo tilbash shatnez tzemer ufishtim yachdav. A person shall not wear a combination of wool and linen, which is called shadnez. So therefore, it's talking about wearing. So it's like in the way of clothing. Klomar derech malbush hushasur v'lo b'inyan acher. I mean, the only time that it's aser is when it's a form of clothing. So therefore, it would not be a problem for a person to line wires in his home using material that is shatnez. And in fact, this is, I mentioned slightly before, that this actually was a common practice, and the various trolleys and so forth, they used to use it because it's an excellent insulating material. I believe it's still actually used as a material, as part of insulation in various aircraft and different things along those lines. And it has a property where it insulates very well, not allowing electrical fields to sort of penetrate and so forth. And I said maybe that might be connected to some of the reasons why the Avodah Zarah, those people that are on these foreign idol worshipping type practices, may be using these materials. Again, I don't know. So therefore, for this reason, our masters, may God protect them, have permitted the following. They permitted wearing forms of hats that were sort of like a Mexican sombrero, which may have in it, you know, a mixture of wool and linen, meaning they are hard, felt-like materials or something along those lines that basically just sort of sits on top of the head but really doesn't offer any sort of cooling or heating, but really just exists for the purpose of blocking out the sun. Now, this doesn't permit any type of hat. In fact, one thing that people should be concerned about are hats for the winter hats. They're the sort of kind that you put on to keep your head warm, and then sometimes have these floppier sides and so forth. All of those seriously need to be checked because they are seriously suspect to having such a Cossack hats are a very good example of the sort of thing that very often contains shatnez, very often contains mixtures of wool and linen, in particular when it's coming from the former Soviet Union. And the reason for that is that linen itself is a very hard, a very difficult material. The outsides of these materials are mink, but the inside of these hats and so forth have all these different fillings, and the fillings that are used to keep everything warm are made, again, for these fibers. And what happens is linen is a very expensive fiber to produce. So any place where there is near slave labor, you're going to find linen being produced. And for that reason, it's very commonplace in Siberia and all these places that they would be using labor forces from the jails and so forth to be able to manufacture products that contain, you know, manufacture linen fiber products and so forth. So this would go into the various, you know, winter clothing, the winter hats, the boots, any type of clothing that is coming of a winter type nature, I mean, especially when it's coming from the former Soviet Union, that is something to be concerned about. But in general, winter clothing, because again, you know, these materials have very nice properties, that they certainly, those should be bought to your local shatnez checker, someone who is skilled in opening up the garments, and again, they do very minimal types of entrance into the garment itself, being taken care not to destroy it and make it unusable, and they can search and poke around in the places that they know about to be able to find whether or not that the garment itself contains mixtures of linen and wool. So now, these type of hats that we're talking about here now in the Sefer Chinuch, these are hats that are these hard felt type hats whose purpose was just to block out the sun. The fact that they're very hard, and even though they contain the oshadness, nevertheless the Chacham permitted them. Because it is not commonplace, it's not the way of people in general to wear, I mean, wear hard things. People don't wear cardboard. I mean, this is the case. This sort of material is not a wearable material. Now, there are those people, though, who nevertheless want to be machmir, want to be particular, not to do this, and the Chachamim that had actually permitted it did not say that this was a problem, meaning that to be strict here is not an issue, meaning it is perfectly all right, and certainly hamachmir tovah lebracha, a person who is particular about these sort of things, brings much blessing upon himself. Now, because of the fact that the actual prohibition revolves around the actual wearing of materials. Materials in general that contain shatnez, that contain mixtures of linen and wool, are not in themselves not permitted. They're permitted. You can actually sell them. You can make use of these materials and so forth. In other words, for the purposes that they are permitted to be used for. And therefore, again, the Chachamim did not forbid the selling of this, provided, of course, that these materials and everything that's involved here is not for the purpose, and a person has no purpose, no nothing in mind on his own to warm himself as a result of all these materials and so forth that he's going to be selling. Certainly, if the material has any chance of coming to the hands of a Jew, or for example, if it's clothing for that matter, there is an issue here in that you have a responsibility as a Jew not to sell somebody something which you know to be shatnez. So, for example, a very common brand of suit that almost always contains shatnez in the collar. Shatnez in suits, by the way, can happen in many places, not just the collar. And an expert really needs to take a look at it. Almost every major Jewish city has people that are qualified that can sit there, tear open a suit, we don't mean ruining it, but they're opening it up carefully, and that they have various methodologies, tests that are done to their hands, to their teeth, methods that are using a microscope if necessary, in order to be able to identify exactly whether or not the materials are okay or not. Now, in this particular situation, like we said, if he's going to be selling these things, and like this suit, for example, Hugo Boss, which again has this material along the collar that could be a sur, again, that frequently, if not almost always, has within it shatnez. So that particular situation is that you would be allowed to sell the suit, but of course you do need to warn the person that this may very well be containing of this, and it needs to be brought to a shatnez checker to remove the collar, and then to be brought to a tailor to repair. Now, it's very important that in any situation where there's going to be shatnez in a suit, that a qualified shatnez checker also be the one to remove the shatnez, even though a qualified tailor is the one that's going to be replacing the removed parts of the garment. The reason for that is that a tailor doesn't have the same concerns as the chacham that is going to be working on your suit, because he's concerned in making sure that there are no fibers and no materials and no threads left behind that may potentially be a question of shatnez. On the other hand, though, that's not going to be the case per se when you're dealing with a tailor who has very different things in mind, and for example, just cutting out the time, or not simply knowing or realizing where things are in terms of the suit that are shatnez. So therefore, he needs to remove them, and then after they're removed, then again, that person, once the shatnez checker removes it, then the tailor can go ahead and repair the suit. Most of the time, shatnez found in suits or in various materials can be repaired. I mean, it's not a particularly difficult repair if a collar, they said, like for example, these Hugo Boss suits have not particularly difficult. It's been removed to go ahead and cut out another fuse that felt and place that felt back in place within the suit itself. When there is a known situation where a garment or materials are going to contain shatnez, a person is not allowed even to try on such a garment. It's very arguable to say that even trying a Hugo Boss suit on is certainly a real halachic issue, since it's kamat 100% that it's going to contain, for example, shatnez. It's going to contain this forbidden mixture. So being that's the case, and the example that's given here, that those people that fear God, they are concerned, in fact, that they're not going to even want to be able to touch or hold up such garments, and therefore they would use some sort of racks or things along those lines in order to be able to. So again, so these shopkeepers would be particular that when they would be handling shatnez, they would go ahead and they would use sticks that they would place behind the garments in order to make sure that they're not going to be putting them on. Now, if you don't know if a garment contains shatnez, meaning there's a question, in other words, as to if it will have or not have shatnez, many chachamim, many great rabbis have permitted trying on such garments, and it's on that basis that most people go to these suit stores today and try on suits before they bring them to the shatnez checkers to be checked. So So they of blessed memory have said, meaning the Chachamim, she'aklaim en lahem shiur afilu chut echad bebeged gadol. Now, this is a very, very different situation than many halachot that you might be familiar with, in that even a single thread in an entire garment, if there's a single linen thread, no matter where it is in the entire garment becomes asur, becomes forbidden. Until it's removed from him, he is sitting there with something which is asur, something not permitted upon him. Now, I'll give you an example of such a situation. People don't realize this, but when they manufacture suits and they make buttonholes, the buttonhole itself actually frequently contains a thread, and then the buttonhole is sewn around that thread, and then a slit made in between in the middle. So there can actually be running through the buttonhole a single thread, and that single thread, I saw in many Slavic suits a number of years ago, that those suits all contained, in other words, they contained a thread that was made of linen. And this is one of the places that a skilled shadow checker will check right away to make sure that it does not contain linen. And again, so that one thread, the entire garment, all of a sudden becomes a sore. Everything is no longer permitted. Akalach shehu ke'en semer. Now there's something called Cicero's blossom. It's a type of material. Vugadala avanim, it grows on the rock Shibiyam HaMelech in the Dead Sea. Asur ima pishtan midrabanan abimnei amar da'ayin. Now it grows on these rocks in the Dead Sea, and it looks like wool. And therefore there's a rabbinical iser to wear a garment that's manufactured from a combination of this, again, Cicero's blossom, this material that looks like wool combined with linen. No, being that's the case, there is an issue in that if you have materials that look like shatnez, today most people wouldn't know what such a garment looks like, but nevertheless, if they have something that has this sort of slubbiness to it and still has a very, real nice, movement to it and so forth and so on, they very often that type of garment falls into a category called marit ha'ayin, meaning that it appears to be that a person is violating the laws. So it's even a garment which would look like wool and linen is in fact not allowed, because someone might reasonably construe that that person is wearing something which is shatnez, and there is an obligation upon the entire Jewish people to maintain themselves in a state that appears, as always, that they are clean from sin. V'yeter pratei mitzvah muvarim b'masechet klayim u'b'masechet Shabbat v'sof makot. So in those places, meaning in the tractates of Klayim, Shabbat, and in the end of Makot, there is more discussion regarding the various laws connected with shatnez. In fact, the law is extremely chamor, to the point where it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch that if a person would be seen wearing woolen linen in the street, someone identified it, that he would go and tell the person about it, and he'd immediately have to disrobe himself of his clothing that was shatnez, even if it may leave him a little bit embarrassed. Now, normally speaking, we don't actually do such things. If there's embarrassment as a factor, we usually hold back. But since this is a Torah law, here in all cases, a person would do anything possible. And it actually happened once that I was walking, and I saw a religious man wearing a suit that clearly, just by looking at it, I could see that it was shatnez. And I immediately told him, and he immediately took off the suit. And after checking, it was in fact a extremely expensive shatnez suit. Quite bad for the man. He invested many hundreds of dollars into that suit before, and in a second it was all gone. But I will tell you, the majority of suits that are out there are all right. Just make sure that you check your suits. Make sure that they're all right. Now, one thing people may not enjoy this piece of advice, but if you want to make sure that everything is well, you should buy your suits, have them checked before you tailor them to make sure, of course, that there's no problems in terms of shatnez, but you have to then bring them back after they're tailored, because you want to make sure that your tailor didn't use any threads that were shatnez, that were made of linen if it's a wool garment, or vice versa in the case of a linen garment. Something to be concerned about. So that's actually two trips. If a person is a gambling man, and like I said, it's a pretty good gamble, as most suits, especially on the lower range of prices, do not contain shatnez. Although it doesn't mean you can go out and use them, and you still have to check them, but again, many of them do not have shatnez. Getting them tailored first would save you that extra trip. So this applies in all cases, be it men or women, all places, all times, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, outside of Eretz Yisrael, whether Beit HaMikdash is standing or not, and for men and for women. This violation still applies, meaning you cannot wear garments made of these two materials mixed together. Now if you put on clothing that contain this mixture, or you covered yourself and warmed yourself up with material that contain this mixture, you would be chayav malkut. You would be chayav to receive lashes from the Torah law prescribed lashes. Now if he put on a felt material upon himself that was a combination of the two, meaning that type of material that would be a derabbanan, it would be a rabbinical iser. Actually, according to some opinions, that is in fact a deraita, it's still a Torah iser. But again, the point is, if he put something that was derabbanan and he put it on himself, he would still receive lashes, but these lashes would be performed by the court at the court's volition, meaning it would be rabbinical lashes, not Torah lashes. V'halovish klaim afilu kol yom kulo ein loke ela echad. So, a person who wears shatnez, even if it's the entire day, he only receives one set of lashes. Aval hotziro sho min habeged v'chziron. But now, if he takes his head out of the garment, hotziro sho v'chziron, again, but he puts it back, he takes his head out again, and he puts it back. Aval bishlo pshat habeged kulo. Even though he didn't completely take off the garment, chayav akul echad v'chad. Every time he took the garment off of his head and put it back on his head, took it off the garment, and he pulled his head through the hole a couple times, each time he has a separate violation of this particular mitzvah. So now, when are we talking about then that the person's violation of this, even if he's wearing it all day, that it only applies, meaning it only requires one set of lashes? That's when he was only warned once. Meaning somebody came along and said to him, you realize that what you're wearing is shatnez, take it off, and the person brazenly decides not to, that in that particular situation, he's only one violation. Sadly speaking, it has happened and occurred to me before where I've pointed something out and someone did not listen, but being that this is a Torah Isser, and I had no way of knowing that the person would not be listening, what can I tell you? Unfortunately, he kept it on. God willing, all of us should be doing tshuva for everything, and God willing, him as well. And we should all find ourselves always in the light of positive and working forward. Now, whatever the case is, though, with one warning, it's only one iser the entire day. And he says to him, take it off! And he was wearing it. And it remained on him for enough time to remove and to put it back on. Meaning every moment, meaning every specific combination of time that it would take that he would be able to take it off and put it on again, every moment then becomes a separate iser and results in a situation where a person then really then continues again to work himself into a deeper and deeper iser. Afal pi shelo pshat, even though he didn't take it off, meaning each time that it's possible. And that's the situation that goes on. Anyways, God willing, all of us realizing, and this is a tremendous thing. I mean, it's a matter of kashrut. The kashrut that applies for food also applies for clothing. And that is the case here also with the mitzvah of shatnez, of being careful not to have these forbidden mixtures. It really does apply, and it really is a real law, and it's applicable today in our lives. And we need to be stringent upon it, just like we wouldn't to stick a piece of chazir, a piece of pig in our mouth. We should not be putting upon our backs clothing that is a combination of wool and linen. And the only way you can be sure of that is to go to your local shatnez checker, to go to your local expert who can check for you and make sure that, again, that there is no isurim, that there's no violations of such a thing. And in that way, we can all be wearing kosher clothing. Now, why is this, of course, important? Besides the fact that we're talking just about a Torah situation, meaning the Torah says straight out, this is the way things need to be, and you have to listen regardless. It says in the Midrash that if a person is wearing shatnez and his prayers go into the heavens, that they are torn up by the angels simply because he's wearing shatnez. The Chacham, the master who taught me how to check, he told me many stories of situations where he knew of people that had garments that contained mixtures of wool and linen that for many, many years didn't find their besher, didn't find their match, their soulmate, didn't get married. And as soon as they went ahead and they checked their garments, boom, within a matter of months, they found themselves engaged and married. And who knows what else may be being held back as a result of a violation of such a simple command to really be able to watch and care for and not violate. Now, please be God that each and every one of us, as we move forward in life and try and be more careful about this mitzvah, that we find ourselves and our prayers being acceptable in the heavens, and God willing, bringing merit to the Jewish people and the bringing of Mashiach to Yidkenu, b'maravi, amenu, amen.